different route south and bypassed him entirely. Then he wouldn't have met her and fallen in love. Then he wouldn't have lost friends like Emery and Bundy. Then he wouldn't have seen the evil men like Raimi's father, were capable of. An ignorant life might have been preferable to all of that, and most of all, he wouldn't have had to do so much killing. Yet, as he worked to free the stone which had revealed itself to be more than 2 feet across and almost 10 inches thick, he knew he would trade all that pain for the good time with Raimi 6 days a week and twice on Sunday. And there were so many good times that, while he struggled to fall asleep at night, he wondered what he'd done to be deserving of such happiness. In Raimi, he'd found a woman he not only loved, but with whom he felt so comfortable that it seemed like he was a pair of old broken-in gloves and she was the set of hands on which the fit was perfect. Where every crinkle and wrinkle and worn-down part was the mirror match for the delicate fingers inside. She wasn't only his wife, she was his best friend, and it was near impossible to imagine his life without her. He remembered, a few months after his pa died, a morning when Mama sat at the kitchen table. She'd been drinking her coffee when tears began to trickle down her cheeks, splashing onto her saucer. He hadn't said anything. A woman's tears had always caused him considerable duress and confusion, but he reached across the table and laid his hand on top of hers. She looked at him and worked up a wan smile and said,
"Wim, I looked at myself in the mirror this morning. I didn't know who I was. It's like half of me has up and disappeared."
Wim was a teenager and didn't understand that much at the time, but now it made sense. He supposed that's the way life worked. You only understood large parts of it in hindsight, and no matter how hard you tried, you couldn't truly appreciate what you had until it floated out of your life like dandelion seeds in the wind. Wim had worked the rock free of the dirt. He grabbed it in his blistered and dirt-stained hands, hoisted it up, and tossed it aside with a tired oof. Then he returned to digging. Chapter 2. The hole was almost as tall as Wim. It wasn't perfectly level at the bottom, but he supposed that didn't matter. It would serve its purpose just as well, either way. As he stood in the grave, he thought he might be better served staying there permanently, and his hand instinctively dropped to the butt of the revolver he kept holstered at his waist. He couldn't imagine a life after this, a life without Raimi. But he knew the animals needed tended to. He'd already been responsible for too much death, and he wouldn't leave them without any provisions. He hadn't given much thought to getting out of the grave, and a full day of digging had left his arms feeling like overcooked noodles. He struggled, clawing at the ground above and digging his feet into the dirt walls for a full 5 minutes before managing to extricate himself. Once he was out, he flopped down onto the earth, which was covered with a soft blanket of golden-yellow pine needles, and caught his breath. It was nearing dark. He'd long ago given up wearing a watch, but he knew it must be closing in on 8 p.m. He realized he'd been at this task the entire day, and guilt washed over him for daring to leave Raimi alone for so long, when they already had such little time remaining. It was 5 days earlier that she got sick. It started with sneezing and a nose that dripped like a faucet, but before that day was up, the sickness filled her lungs and the coughing started. She'd gone downhill rapidly after that. She'd been bedridden for the last 2 days. Even sitting up left her weak and exhausted. She tried to talk occasionally, but it wasn't long before delirium had overtaken her, and all she did was moan. One time, her feverish eyes locked on him and her mouth opened, and he thought he heard her say, "Please, do it." But he told himself that was nothing but his imagination. At least he tried to tell himself that. That was the last time he saw her conscious. In some ways, that was easier. Maybe it made him chicken, but he didn't want to hear that kind of talking. It all seemed unfair. Wim knew that very idea, that this was unfair, made little sense in a world where barely 1 in a million people had survived the plague, and many, maybe even most, of the initial survivors died in the weeks and months after. They'd been given almost 4 more years than most, but that wasn't nearly enough. The years in the cabin were the happiest since Wim's childhood, maybe his entire life even. They'd had their evenings on the swing, their cold winter nights in front of the fireplace. As he predicted, it wasn't always an easy life, but it was always a good one. Every day,